is Leeds Student Radio.
Welcome again to Down to Business. I'm Edwin Otter.
And I'm Joseph Wilde.
All right, in this week's edition, we have quite an exciting show for you today. But now for our major headlines.
Concluding its long-standing process of tapering, America's Federal Reserve announced its final monthly purchase of bonds, bringing an end to its third round of quantitative easing. Central Bank introduced its policy of asset buying in November 2008. Supporters of QE point to falling unemployment in America and a strengthened economy, but critics say it's merely provided cheap money to investors and inflated asset prices. Whatever the verdict, the Fed now views QE as a vital tool and is not ruling out a future round. Sweden's central bank also cut its main interest rate to zero. Inflation has been below the Riksbank's target of 2% for almost 3 years, and the bank intends to keep interest rates low until inflation has clearly picked up. However, Sweden's economy is growing much faster than the rest of the Eurozone, which is also battling deflation.
Wait, Joe, their interest rates were cut to what?
Cut to zero, literally, which is a record low. The principle behind them doing this is actually quite smart. It's an attempt to combat the deflationary pressures their economy is experiencing. Deflation basically means overall things get cheaper rather than more expensive, which causes individuals and firms to delay their purchases, and many companies will see profits, falling profits or even losses.
Okay, I suppose that makes sense. Speaking of losses, Germany's biggest bank recorded a loss for the third quarter. Deutsche Bank set aside almost 900 million, that's 1.1 billion US dollars, in the period towards the legal fees it expects to incur from investigations into the LIBOR scandal and other regulatory issues.
The Russian ruble continued to fall on new lows against the dollar. The economic sanctions against Russia over the conflict in Ukraine are hurting. Markets were spooked by reports that Rosneft, the state oil giant, has requested more emergency aid from the government.
So what is Rosneft, and why is there such a reaction in the markets?
It's an integrated oil company, majority owned by the government of Russia. It's headquartered in Moscow. Quite a number of substantial sanctions on Russia, which go back quite a while, but the most damaging, and I suppose the ones that have the market reacting, are the sanctions imposed by the US Treasury that prohibit any US person from providing any new finance to major Russian financial institutions and two Russian energy firms, which includes Rosneft, which limits their access to US capital markets, hence why Rosneft is seeking emergency funds from the government, which is creating a bit of a worry among shareholders.
Okay, so besides energy, which obviously keeps an economy running, what other sectors have been affected by the US sanctions against Russia's economy?
Well, in addition to the energy sector, financial services and arms-related materials have also been affected.
Shame. These businessmen are really getting caught in the crossfires here.
Well, business and politics go hand in hand a lot of the time, particularly in Russia. It's often seen more subtly in the UK with the exchange of personnel between top business roles in government and regulation positions. In the UK, it's often known as the revolving door of politics.
In other news, in a bid to stamp out offshore tax evasion, 51 countries signed an agreement to start exchanging tax information systematically from 2017. Another 30 have pledged to join later. This deal is a step forward but contains loopholes. Most critics have complained. Fiat Chrysler Automobiles decided to spin off Ferrari. It will float 10% of its shares in an IPO next year and distribute the remainder to Fiat shareholders. The company is hoping to reduce its debt and at the same time finance a big rollout of new cars. Ferrari chairman Luca Cordero di Montezemolo, not sure I said that right, recently stepped down after repeatedly clashing over strategy with Sergio Marchionne, Fiat's boss.
Facebook reported a big surge in quarterly revenue and profits as sales rose from mobile advertising. The number of people who use the social network on a monthly basis expanded to 1.35 billion. Still, investors were unnerved by Facebook's rising costs in investing in businesses such as virtual reality headsets. Twitter's share fell below the price at which it closed on its stock market debut a year ago. Its third quarter earnings showed that although the number of people who use it monthly had risen to 284 million, the rate at which it was growing had slowed again. Revenue doubled in the quarter to $361 million, though the company reported another net loss and is yet to turn a profit. The latest stress tests of European banks found 25 with inadequate capital to cope with severe economic shock as of the end of 2013, 9 of them in Italy. Since then, 12 of the 15 have made up the shortfall, leaving with 13 with a combined 9.5 billion euros to raise.
Again, you're welcome to Down to Business, your student portal into the world of economics, finance, and business. We're joined here by our guest, Matt Essam. Welcome, Matt. Sorry, we didn't hear you there.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Okay, so, yeah, it's just been an interesting week there, we see. There have been quite a lot of stories to do with Russia, obviously. But yeah, we're more focused on the Leeds economy. And I understand that you have two businesses that are, you know, based here in Leeds. Could you tell us a bit more about those businesses?
Yeah, the main business is a business development company called Vonza Digital. And we specialize in helping businesses develop for the digital world. So that can range from website development, online marketing. It's quite a broad spectrum, really. And the other business that I run is a record label. I'm based in Leeds. My business partner is based in Amsterdam. But we're looking to sort of put a few nights on and things in Leeds and try and spread the word about the label as much as possible, really.
Yeah, so, you're also a Uni of Leeds alumni.
Yeah, that's correct.
So you have been to the city before, it's not new to you.
Yeah.
And so what else attracted you about Leeds as a city?
Well, I think one of the main things is that the city has changed vastly since I first came here. I never really used to go into the town centre much because, to be honest, there wasn't really that much there apart from going out sort of clubbing and bars and stuff like that. But now, since the Trinity has opened, there's new bars, boutique shops, there just seems to be so much money being pumped into the city. It's a completely different environment, and it feels like a different place. It's only really when I come back up to Headingley and around the Union that I sort of feel like I'm back in Leeds.
Right, yeah.
I've got a question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've made a success capitalising on sort of the creative and digital industries in Leeds. I would ask you, is it a bit of a myth? Is it a bit naive to think that students have to travel down to London and the South East to break through in terms of digital industries and the creative sector?
Yeah, definitely. I think Leeds and Manchester are two of the biggest creative hubs in terms of digital. Obviously, London's great. You've got sort of like Silicon Roundabout, the Shoreditch area, which is a massive digital and creative industry. But you don't need to look very far in Leeds to find a digital agency. There's so many up here. There's so many different things going on. And I think the great thing about it is it's almost like just an area of London. Everything's quite concentrated, so it's quite easy to make good connections. It's easy to network with people. I'm actually based in a co-working area down in Duke Studios, which is a creative working space where any sort of businesses or individuals within the creative industry can come and sort of all get together in one place, which is really good and really useful for that sort of thing. So yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people like to go and experience London and sort of see what it's about. And I think some people are cut out for it and other people aren't. I worked down in London for 6 months, and although I enjoyed it and I love London as a city, for me, it wasn't really the lifestyle I was after. There was just too much travelling around, commuting, and it wasn't practical for me. Some of my friends lived in North London, other friends lived in East London. I was based in South London, and it just wasn't easy. It wasn't a good sort of social lifestyle. It was just mainly work and stuff all the time. Whereas in Leeds, you can go to work, you can work in the city, and you can walk home.
Right.
And that's great. And there's a diverse enough amount of sort of bars and shops and things that are constantly changing, and things are constantly being developed. And Manchester's on your doorstep, and so is Liverpool, and lots of great cities. And to be honest, London's only 2 hours on the train, so you're not a million miles from London.
Yeah. So going back to yourself as an entrepreneur, what kind of attracted you about, in terms of your experiences maybe, to these specific industries? Because creative and digital is one, but you know, music is a beast on its own. So how did you just get into that decision?
Well, I mean, I've always been interested in music, but I've always looked at it as something that's more of a hobby. And I think what digital allowed me to do is create a business out of it, because digital is so prominent and the internet is just constantly expanding, and it, as a business, it's extremely hard to survive if you're not online. There are a few industries really that can sort of succeed without being online, And I think it's really interesting because there's a lot of, in terms of technological developments, I know we spoke briefly before about, you know, how is the music industry making money, and obviously record sales, there's not much money in that anymore. And I think the technology and the technology industry really allows you to explore different options. All you need to, you know, since the iPod was first invented and first came to market, look how much the music industry has changed in terms of digital and things like that. And that's something that really allows you to sort of combine that. When I first started out, I really found it difficult to bring all my interests together, but I think digital is the one thing that does connect them all.
Right.
So in terms of your record label Architects of Paradise, obviously it's a saturated market, and like you said, it's becoming increasingly difficult to make money, particularly with the sort of sides we've seen, like Pirate Bay, or the illegal underground side of things like that. How would you say your Architects of Paradise is going to try and differentiate itself, and what sort of niche are you aiming for, or are you just going to try and get a bit of a broad spectrum and try and capture a bit of everything, or are you really hammering in on a specific area of the market?
Yeah, well, Architects of Paradise really is a label that's about a certain style of music, in terms of everything that we release has quite an uplifting vibe. It's the sort of thing that you would expect at festivals, sort of beach parties, things like that. It's not necessarily just house music or whatever, like, you know, there's quite a different genres that we release, but they all have a similar feeling about them. So we're being very specific in the type of music we release. In terms of how I'm approaching it as a business, I mean, primarily I'm not focusing on it as a business to make money. It's more of something that I really enjoy doing, and it's more of a lifestyle choice for me. But we are looking to explore different avenues. So at the moment, we're working with a company in Leeds developing an app to try and sort of bridge that gap between digital music and physical music, because I think that's really important. There's still a lot of people out there that collect vinyl. I think it's great to actually have something physical to play, but it's about the practicality of it. You know, not everyone, well, most people don't have a vinyl player, and even, you know, Macs and stuff these days don't even have CD drives. So it's about creating something which is actually you can integrate with the current technology that you have. And again, that sort of goes back to the digital thing. That is something that I have experience in, and that I can explore. And it's something that excites me, and yeah, it's something that there is money in, because if you sort of capitalize on the devices that we use on a day-to-day basis, and you create an application that actually adds value to people, yeah, and that's different to what is out there, then people will use it, and that just opens up a door of possibilities as well.
So what do you think, because obviously places like Radio Shack, Best Buy, they've all gone out of business, because as you said, it's more, you know, going onto the digital and the soft copy side of things. So is there a future for business shops at all? Is there a model that you think could kind of accommodate for people who, you know, maybe want to come in and still have the feel of being in a shop buying their music, but not necessarily a hard copy?
Yeah, definitely. I think there is definitely something there, but I think you're still going to get the people that collect vinyl and play vinyl, and you only have to look at sort of like the underground house music scene in Leeds to, you know, you don't have to look far to see DJs that still play vinyl. You don't have to look far to people that love to collect vinyl. So there will always be that physical aspect, but I think, you know, what you said is really interesting about having that physical store. I think Burberry is a really good example. I went to one of their stores in London, and again, it's all about technology. It's all about going with the technology rather than trying to fight it. I think a lot of people within the music industry, especially the big majors and the big indies, they try and fight this sort of, oh, well, everyone's downloading it, let's try and stop people downloading it, rather than going, well, this technology is available, how can we utilize it? How can we change the way? Like, we're in control, we're distributing the music.
Right. And if the legislation had kind of improved around that period, you know, then obviously companies would have been more interested, but they just kind of let it go, and that's why you have LimeWire and the Pirate Bays and so on. So the legislation came in too late, and the big companies had already, you know, lost profits to kind of catch up with the new incoming companies. So going back to yourself as an entrepreneur, what were some of the main challenges that you faced for our listeners here who may be thinking of starting their own businesses?
I'd say cash flow really is a big one. You sort of want to go and do your own thing, and I love the fact that digital makes it a lot easier to get more of an instant revenue. You know, if you start a blog that's successful and you can monetize that, or if you're offering a service like web design, things like that, they're things that are fairly instant that you can get cash flow from. But if you've got a really innovative idea for a new app or something that's going to take a lot of work, you've sort of got two options. You either need someone to invest in you, or you need to do it yourself. You know, you need to either sort of take the Facebook route, where you get a group of you together and you go and build the thing yourself, and you sort of take that time, or you can't do it yourself and you try and pitch the idea to someone with proof of concept and try and get investment. So I think, like, the hardest thing is that leap from going, like, I know what I want to do, to actually doing it. And I think it's about being patient and about really trying to map out as much as possible, looking at your own goal, where you want to be, what you want to achieve, and really trying to map out little steps along the way that you can do to achieve that. And then just being patient and just sort of working on it little by little and just seeing it build and trying to tell as many people about your idea as possible, trying to tell as many people about your business as possible, and really get out there and just make sure you can pay the bills and have still have a decent standard of living, and that might mean taking on a part-time job or whatever, but you know, if you start sacrificing that and then you get into debt or whatever, then you're making things worse for yourself. It's just about being patient and just saying, I know what I want, I just got to keep working on it, and eventually I will get it, and being confident in that. And I think my personal opinion is, if you really believe that and you really set out to achieve that, then you can do it. I mean, look at dissertations. When that first comes, you think, that's ridiculous, like, I'm never going to be able to do that. But you just, like you said, planning. It's all about the planning. It's all about setting out how you're going to do it, how you're going to go about it. And then eventually, within that time period, within that year, you write it, and there you've got it. And it feels like, wow, I can't believe I've done that. I think there's this myth of this overnight success that Facebook just one day was there and it's a million. It's like, it's not how it happened. And really, those challenges, I think you've just got to keep plugging away at it, basically.
Yeah.
In terms of your career, you've obviously got a quite a broad portfolio there with Vons Digital. Got your record label, and you were speaking to me earlier saying you were an equity shareholder in a Lyft Performance Apparel clothing line. So obviously your career is off to great success already. Is there anything that you took advantage of whilst at university, or sort of wish you had? Because there's obviously a broad range of extracurricular things students can get involved in. Would you say you capitalised on any of them and they've helped you to where you are now? Or if you didn't, would you say what are the main things students can be doing to advance themselves, better themselves, and sort of start to advance in the world of business before they've even graduated?
Yeah, well, there's Leeds Spark, obviously, which you're probably familiar with, which is really great. I used it a little bit when I was here in terms of career advice and things like that, but it's really helped me since I've graduated to A, make contacts, and B, have people available to offer advice, whether it's just about accounting or business planning or anything like that. It's all there. You know, there are people that sort of know what they're talking about to advise you. So that's something that's really helped me, and I'd really urge people to check that out. The other thing that I'd say really helped me was my placement module, and that was literally just, I think it was about a month working for a digital agency in Leeds, and they're called Parallax now, and they weren't when I started working for them, but they've since rebranded, and they're now a big successful agency, but they're also some of my closest friends. So for me, that network that opened up really, really helped me out. And I think what you find is, if you've got a good product or a good service, and you've got something that you're excited and passionate about, if you start talking to people about it, other people will talk about it. So for example, the record label, I was actually introduced to my business partner in the record label through my friend who runs the agency who I did a placement for. So if I hadn't met them, then the record label might not have ever existed. So it's really just about making those contacts, and they knew, they introduced me to them because I said to them, oh, I want to start a record label, I love music, blah blah blah, yeah, blah. And I was really excited and passionate, so they went, oh, actually, we know someone, he's looking for a website, maybe you guys could work together. And then sort of the rest is history, really.
So from that, networks are key.
Yeah,
it's not
definitely
what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
Sort of following on from that, I've researched yourself, so you're on Twitter and like LinkedIn professionally. Would you advise students to make the most of the online presence, or would you sort of say separate business and leisure and keep all your drunken Facebook and Twitter photos one way on one side and then not let that engage with employers, or would you try and say maximise that online presence and sort of use that to your advantage?
You've got to be careful. It depends what you want to do. If you want to go and work for a big firm like KPMG or someone like that, then, you know, no, you don't want all of these photos of you half naked drunk on Facebook, because they will look at that. But, you know, I know some agencies in Leeds who would probably look at that and think, oh, this guy's cool, he's got a bit of a social life, he's not just going to sit in the office all day. And so it really depends what sort of company you're going for, and I think it's probably worth doing a bit of research in that first. I mean, as a rule, I don't particularly like having any of my personal life online, really, but that's just my preference. Other people don't seem to have a problem with it, but I think in terms of employability, you definitely have to be careful. But if you're just talking about being an entrepreneur, I mean, it's about your reputation, really, isn't it? If you're sort of, you look at the sort of Richard Bransons and stuff, you know, then you won't find any naked photos of them online, because it would tarnish their reputation. So you've got to think about where you might be in 10 years. And it's very, very easy for people to dig these photos out, because Richard Branson didn't have a Facebook account, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When he was growing up. So you have got to think about the longer term implications, I think.
Speaking of having vision, what is your vision for these three very different organized companies that you have going? Are you kind of looking to expand into new areas, or are you trying to consolidate within each of these sectors to ensure that you experience the growth that you're looking for?
Well, like you said, I think they are all very unique. and I think I've got different visions for each of them, really. For Vonza Digital, I've sort of got a vision of creating a place where people can come, freelancers can come and work on projects that we provide, you know, through the clients that we work with. So they get to work on cool projects, but they're not employed by us, they're not bound by an employment contract, so they can sort of come as you go. So they've got the freedom of freelancers, but they also feel like they belong to something bigger, and that's sort of like the end goal for Vonza. As far as the record label, like I said to you before, I'd really like to look into technological advancements, how I can bridge that gap between digital and physical. Also like to get into festivals and events and things like that, and really build that as a brand more than anything else. And as far as the clothing company, my business partner is very much sort of the driver of that, but he's got a great vision to be a sort of Red Bull style clothing company, in terms of, you know, it's about the lifestyle, it's not about the actual product, it's about getting people into sports, getting people active, showing what the top athletes can do, and inspiring people to go and do that as well themselves, and really creating that community and that brand feel around the whole thing.
Yeah. You seem, you know, I'd say very passionate about each of these individual businesses, which are all very different, but all kind of bring together what it is you want to achieve with your career. How did you sort of come to these conclusions? Did you start thinking about your personal values? Because obviously you started off in a graduate company, you saw how that worked, and then you kind of, when did you say, okay, I'm ready, this is what I want to do, I'm prepared for this road now, this is the path for me? Because obviously you have to kind of contemplate, you know, future, and walking into that door of not knowing, you know, you kind of had to make these sacrifices, you know, every now and then, and some people obviously who don't have as much support and reassurance wouldn't know that they're actually making the right choice for themselves.
I think, well, obviously life is full of important choices, isn't it? But I think one of the things I've found in the past is one of the most sort of distressing and stressful times is when you're waiting to make that decision. You know, maybe your gut's saying one thing but your head's saying something else. And I'd say that my biggest bit of advice is go with it, go do it, because you can only really find out what you enjoy doing or what you want to do or whether it's going to work if you do it. You can't find out by running through in your head what it might be like, because there's, you know, they're just an unlimited amount of scenarios, and that's something I struggle with for a long time, because I, you know, because of what people tell you, because of how society says this is what you should do, you should go to university, get a degree, get a job, good job, get married, have kids, all of that stuff, that's sort of like how we're brought up, or how most people are brought up. And I think because that's so ingrained, it's very hard to go against it and actually do something that you know isn't particularly stable, and there's no certainty about it, really. But you can only, if you go and do that and it doesn't work, then go do something else. The one thing I'd say is focus on getting a degree. I know a degree is not everything, but at least that's a backup. That's something that if you go and do something that doesn't work, you have that degree, you have that experience, and you can go and get a job. And then maybe try something else once you've sort of found your feet a bit more. But you've sort of got to just jump into things a little bit. It, you know, if you're talking about from an entrepreneurial perspective, you've really, you've got to do things before you're ready. I'd say that's my biggest bit of advice. Because if you wait until you're ready, you're never going to do it, because you just keep coming up with reasons why you're not ready. So if you really feel like that's something that you want to do, or even something that you might want to do, go and try it. You know, go and see if it works. And if it doesn't, it's not the end of the world. I always like to, I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss, and he defines risk as an irreversible outcome. And I think that's a great way of looking at it, because if you actually put down your fears, what's the worst thing that can happen here? And then you accept that and you say, right, well, if that does happen, this is what I'm going to do about it. It's not irreversible. This is how I can get around it. Then you know, and then you can just go and do it.
Yeah, I've heard someone say something similar, and it was almost like a self-reflection, kind of self-awareness type of thing. And he was basically saying that if you were 80 years old and there was one thing that you wish you had done, what would you do? Not go and do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do, Steve Jobs is great example of that, because I know when he first got diagnosed with cancer, he said, he now gets up in the morning, he looks in the mirror and he says, if today were the last day of my life, would I be doing today what I would do? And that's just, you know, that sums it up for me. And also in another Harvard speech he gave, he was talking about remembering that you're going to die is the easiest way of avoiding the trap of thinking that you've got something to lose.
Wow. All right, thank you very much, man.
And I'm not deep now.
Yeah. This was Down to Business. Join us again next week for another special edition. Have a wonderful week. I'm Edwin Otto.
I'm Joseph Wild.
And I'm Matt Essam.
Thanks for coming in, Matt.